So a hosafa concerning skulos especially. But let's begin with a more basic topic, which relates to what is the din of a situation which where by a certain practice might have once upon a time been usher because of chukos ha'akum, but currently there's no longer any association with avodah zarah. We mentioned already what seems to be a machlokas haposkim on that topic, but I'd like to focus on the view of Rav Moshe Feinstein, which I think we accept. And Rav Moshe basically says that we look at the current situation. Accordingly, what was once chukos ha'akum may no longer be chukos ha'akum. We saw in Rav Moshe's treatment of yarmulkes, where he said that even if removing one's head covering was once upon a time a violation of chukos ha'akum, as the Taz maintains, this is no longer the case, because the reason why Goyim don't wear yarmulkes or don't wear head coverings anymore is not a chok in any sense. And Rav Moshe says this idea even more explicitly in Egros Moshe, Yoridei Chelek Beis, Simen Nun Gimel. It's an interesting topic over there. He's talking about the permissibility of teaching Greek mythology and Avodah Zarah. And Tal Chadvarim, he says, if it is prohibited to read Sefer Avodah Zarah, even though currently nobody serves these particular Avodah Zarahs, the restriction still remains. So in the other shiurim, we're going to talk about what that means in practice. But what's relevant for here is the following. He writes, "Lo dami l'stam chukos ha'akum shelo nemar ha'iser al hadavar el al mashu chok ha'akum." This is not similar to chukos ha'akum, where we say that if nowadays it's no longer chukos ha'akum, it's mutter, even though once upon a time it was. "Dilachein kevan shepasku akum l'snai kein hari ein zeshuv mechlal ha'iser." If the Akum stop doing this, then it's no longer Bechlal Yisr anymore. In other words, Chukos Akum doesn't mean what once upon a time the Akum did, but rather what they do now. And therefore, if right now they don't do it, it's not Bechlal Yisr Chukos Akum. Kevin Dechok Akum Shebo, Hu Haya Ha'isr, V'lo Etzem Hadavar. Chukos Akum is not like Azara, or even things that are Zera atu avodah zara, like reading idolatrous works or the like. Here, what he's saying is that what makes a chukos ha'akum is the fact that it is currently a chok ha'akum. It's not that the etzem hadavar is asur, it's the fact that they do it. And memeila, it's going to be mutter. Now, this mar makom is going to be very relevant for us in our discussion about addressing skulos. Now, there are a lot of skulos, and we're not here today to discuss whether skulos are advisable. I certainly don't think one should run after skulos, and certainly not ones without a strong basis. I'll just share a quick story, which I think is very relevant to this point about our attitude. I don't know the exact details of the story, but they once went to Rav Eliashiv, and they told him that you had a great-great-great-great-grandchild or something like that, and they wanted him to be the Sandik of the Bris. I think the Bris was in Bnei Brak. And he said, no, thank you. And he said, but there's a skula that if you are the Sandik at the seventh generation child or something like that, you go straight to Olam Haba. And he said, it's okay. I'd rather get into Olam Haba through the front door. And I think what he was saying is a certainly an appropriate approach, which is that the Torah teaches us how to get Olam Haba, the Torah teaches us how to live our lives. And if we follow the Torah, that's when we'll be matzliach. And we don't need kenaches, you know, a skula to get into Olam Haba this way or that way or whatever it is. But we have to do what's right. Nevertheless, so I don't think skulos are a good idea. It's certainly not my mesora to run after skulos. But that's not our question. Our question is it asr mitzad chukos ha'akum? And we're not going to get into right now. Hopefully we will soon in later shiurim about the question of whether certain schools might be a violation of Nichosh or Lo Se'on anywhere. The like, again, not right now. Now we're just looking at the question of Fukus Akum. So one could make the following argument that schoolos are in fact asur based off of Fukus Akum. And that is because if there's a school with no explanation, or perhaps even with no good explanation, then we should assume it's idolatrous in root. Just like the Rama writes, citing the Ran, that something that's milsablo taimas asur al tzchukos akum. Why? Because mistama, it has a shemetz avodah zarah, it has srach avodah zarah. After all, why else would people do this thing if there's no tam? It must be that there's association with idolatry. So there are, in fact, many, we should say the same thing for a skula, especially where there is no good reason. Many of the explanations given for schools seem like they're sort of after-the-fact explanations. But shouldn't we be concerned that there's an idolatrous root? In fact, the Rama sounds like, citing the Ran, that even if we know of no known idolatrous root, if it's a milsablo taima, then we have to be machmir. Now, earlier, we discussed the question of the red bendel. That was particularly problematic, because that is mentioned in the Tosefta, seemingly, though we questioned if that's explicit or not, but seemingly it's mentioned under the things of Dark Amori. But there are other things that might seem to have non-Jewish origins, even though they are not mentioned in the Tosefta. One example is the Ishlisel Chala. So to put it a little differently, the Ran Paskin, that the Rama and the Rama Paskin, that anything is asur, there's reason to be suspicious that it is idolatrous in its origins. And that might be the case with many skulos. Now, especially because the Ran says, like we said, it's asur even if there is no known association with Avodah Zarah, as long as it's a milsablo taima. At the same time, though, all these skulos, almost all of them, have some sort of explanation. It's true, many of the explanations are far-fetched, but maybe they're enough to permit it. And I think really, ultimately, even Shlissel Chal is going to be okay. Now let's think about it for a moment. First of all, if we accept Rav Moshe that we just mentioned, then I think you could argue it's going to be okay, assuming that these things are no longer being practiced by idolaters. And especially if they're not listed in the Tosefta for Dark Yamori, I don't know if we have to worry about the idolatrous roots. Right now, these things aren't being done by Avodah Zarah. And why are the Jews doing it? They're doing it because it's a skula. It's only Jews nowadays, primarily, who make Shlissel Chal, I imagine. Nobody who makes Shlissel Chal nowadays certainly does it because the Goyim do it or because the Goyim did it, until a couple of troublemakers started looking up, you know, what the origins of Shlissel Chal is. Nobody in Borough Park who makes Shlissel Challah was at all aware of these problematic origins. If you ask them why they're making Shlissel Challah, they'll tell you it's a skula for X or Y or Z. They may tell you a half a dozen of explanations why it's a skula for this. They might just say it's a pi kavalah, but it's very hard to say it is chukos akum. And even if you say that the things that are fixed in Chazal, or that are mentioned in Chazal, are fixed, and even that we saw wasn't Pashut, many say that the ones in the Tosefta that aren't in the Bavli are not obligatory, that's why the Bavli left them out. But even if you don't accept that view, if you assume that everything in the Tosefta is Aser, but still, that shouldn't really hold true for Shlissel Chal. Moreover, we could permit it based off of another explanation, the Maharik. Remember, the Maharik says that the reason why milsablo taima is asur is because the fact that you're doing this shows that you're being machshiv the Avodah Zarah, you're trying to copy them and the like. When it comes to skulos b'zman hazeh, that's not the reason why anybody does them. They all have reasons, like we said. Again, you might not think these are great reasons, but they're reasons from the perspective of the people doing them. They are valid reasons. They're not doing them because they're machshiv the Avodah Zarah. They don't know any of the Avodah Zarah that do this. Many of the skulos are endorsed by great rabbis and Kabbalists, and even if you've never heard of them, but the reason why the people doing them are doing them is because they're endorsed by this great rabbi or Kabbalist. There's a book that Yoni was telling us about for Yoldos, full of lots of skulos. Now, I've never heard of these schools. I've never even heard of the rabbis endorsing them, but okay, they have some nichus. Now, again, I'm not advocating that these be followed. I don't think that they necessarily should. But I think the guy who buys the book and reads the schools and then does the schools isn't going to be in violation of Fukus Akum. And even if they don't know the reason, they just know that Al-Pi Kabbalah, it's advisable. So the reason why they're doing it is because some Kobol said that it's beneficial Al-Pi Kabbalah. And even if that Kabbalist isn't the most reputable Kabbalist in the world, it's not like it's in the Kisvei Arizal or the like. But still, assuming you're unaware of the idolatrous root, then that should be enough not to be in violation of Chukos Akum according to the Ma'arik. And I don't think you're chayef to start Googling this practice to discover the origin. You read it in the Sefer, then I think it's probably not Chukos Akum. Again, not necessarily that that's something we should do. And certainly that's going to be true if you hold with the Bach. The Bach, remember, holds that to be in violation of Chukos Akum, you have to have intent, lizdamos. You can't do it kamosha hamos. And like we said for the Ma'arik, assuming that there's no element of fritzos, then it's really the intent to copy that causes something, a particular practice, to be in violation of Chukos Akum. Now it's true, it's more complex for the Ran, as we mentioned, who says that most lotam is because of the possible idolatrous root, as opposed to Ma'arik, who says most lotam means you're just trying to be like them. But even according to the Ran, these explanations that are given for these particular schools might be enough to make them considered a milsa lotam. After all, just think about where the Gemara applies. The Gemara says that burning beds of the kings and hamstringing the animals are all mutter because these are basically, as the Ran understands, a milsa b'tayma. That's enough to be matir. Now, you could say, well, that was a good reason, but it's not a great reason. I'm saying, and even if you're going to say the school, the idea from Malachim was to show that their kelim can't be used by anybody else. Uncle did that for Avraham Gamliel, and he wasn't sorry for Avraham Gamliel's stuff. He was selling his own stuff. Again, it's going to be less clear whether these schools are going to be permissible for the Gra, because the Gra holds that ritualistic matters are usur, even when they have no source. So for the Gra, might be harder, but even he might agree in the case where there are currently no goyim doing it and there's no knowledge or awareness. One hara, once we're on that topic, we had a hard time understanding how the Ran and the Avodah Zarah would read the Gemara in Sanhedrin, because Ran and Avodah Zarah says the reason why Sreifa and Lachem is mutar because it's a tam, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin says it's because of a pasuk. So we suggested that the answer is that there are two reasons why it's mutter. It's mutter because of the tam, and it's also mutter because of the pasuk. So the Sridei Eish says something similar, just maybe a little more meduyik. The way he puts it is that the fact that there's a pasuk shows there's a tam. In other words, the reason why it's mutter is because there's a tam. You can know there's a tam because you come up with the tam. You know that there's a tam because it's described in the pasuk. One other ha'ara on what we talked about. So does a Jew need to be nicker in their dress? We started out by reading the Rambam. It really sounds like a Jew has to be nicker in dress, just like he's nicker in his deos. He should be nicker in his malbush. And that certainly does seem what the Rambam in Perek Yud Aleph, the Tefillah of Zara Lacha Aleph, sounds like. However, what's interesting is that the Ramah also quotes this Rambam. It's interesting, the Mechaber doesn't bring it down, but the Ramah does. But he also quotes the Ma'arik. And the Ma'arik clearly holds that a Jew doesn't have to be distinct in his dress. He could look exactly like a Goyim as long as it's not something that's pre-existing. Now, we have to think about, in terms of how we paskin, the rives the Ramah, the Ma'arik brings. Because depending on which raya we accept the Ma'arik, so that might lead to a different conclusion. Let me just elaborate a little bit. So one of the rayos that the Ma'arik bring is from the Gemara Chulin. The Gemara Chulin says that since the guy who didn't wash was fed in a vela, so the storekeeper clearly assumed that he wasn't Jewish only because he didn't wash, even though he was dressed like a guy. So that shows us that it's not usher to dress entirely like a guy. So that is clearly the view of the Ma'arik. According to the Ma'arik, it's clear that even someone who is indistinguishable through his dress as a Jew, as long as he's not wearing pre-tzitzit gayish clothing, is not in violation of the Isser. However, as we saw, the Shach is docha that raya from his father, the Shach says that's not a good raya because that story took place b'shas adchak, according to the Medrash. Okay, so what other raya does the Ma'arik have? So the Grat, the end of Sivkat and Vav, quotes another raya from the Ma'arik, from the Ilah Daf Yad Zayin. That Gemara indicates that it's okay for your clothing to be gayish, as long as, because the Gemara says that in order for him to sort of go to Rome to advocate on behalf of the Jews, all he had to do was get a guy's haircut. He didn't have to change his clothing. Sounds like it's more to the word Jewish clothing, but that's not going to be nearly as far-reaching the raya, because in that case, all we know is that if you're not Karv L'Malchus, you're allowed to wear guyish clothing as long as you're distinguishable as a Jew through your hair. But it may very well be that you need some distinguishing feature. And therefore, if there's no distinguishing feature, it could be that it would still be aser. What about the Sigur Arachtas Masana? Well, that might show us that you need something Jewish, but that might just be aser because of the pritzos, Shabbat, whether you say it like Rashi, because it was the Minag, or like the Rif, that it was a formal violation of Fukus Hakam. So perhaps you can't prove anything from there either, as long as you don't have something pritzos. So basically what comes out is that even though it sounds like from the Rambam he must be noticeably Jewish, there's no clear-cut raya that that's the case, especially when we look at Makoros for that idea and the like. We also pointed out, though, that it's very likely that if a person, you know, nowadays, at least if you're wearing a yarmulke for a man, you are noticeably Jewish in your dress, and for Jewish women, if they're dressed in a tzniutic way, it'll also more or less be noticeable. Now, one final point on clothing. So we already noted that if you follow the view of the Mecha, of the Rama, the Ma'arik, the Ran, then wearing Goyish clothing won't be aser according to, won't be a violation of Chukos Hakam. But what about if you follow the view of the Gra? What would the Gra say? So again, the Gra holds that for something to be mutter, you have to basically be able to say, I would have done it without them. If you could say, I would have done it without them, then you're not considered to be copying the guy. So we pointed out at the time that it seems like, according to the Gra, regular clothing, we could say it's mutter, because I would have done it without them, but we are less certain about a tie. A tie doesn't serve any particular utility, so could you really say I would have done it without them? Not so clear that the Gra would be matir. The only tzad we had to be makel was that, well, maybe originally the tie served a purpose, a utilitarian purpose, maybe it helped keep people's shirts closed. And even though now it doesn't serve that purpose anymore because we have buttons, but doesn't become usher with the invention of the buttons. Now, Rav Moshe just has one more kinetch, which I want to bring out. This is Rav Moshe Yordechel Balasim and Pei Aleph. So he's dealing with the question of clothing. We mentioned this tshuva earlier. Somebody asked him, you know, the Jews that came from Poland, in Poland, they wore Hasidic Levush, and now they came to America. Is it okay for them to wear Gaish clothing? Rav Moshe says, yes, it is. And he says, certainly it's going to be true for the Ran and for the Ma'arik and the like. But then he says, maybe it'll also be much for the Gra. Why? Because, let me just read a little bit. V'chvein, afla Gra, b'viuro, shepalag al Ran, v'amarik, v'haramah, v'sover, d'b'chol malbush ha-miyuchad l'nachrim asr, any malbush miyuchad l'nachrim is asr, gamkein, hamati begandim, shayinu lov shim b'lav hachli, he's matir begandim that he would have worn anyways, peyrush, lo b'shvil shehanachrim lov shim b'eilu, Av shekadmu hanachlan v'lov shan. If we would have worn them anyways, even though the guy wore first, it's mutter, even according to the Gra. So as I said, that makes sense, and Rav Moshe is saying it's true for other clothing, not necessarily a tie. But then he adds, "Kol shekhen be'elu abagadu b'medina zu de'lo kadmu hanachlan klal de'mitchila heim gam li'Yisrael k'mo l'nachrim sheleka iser." Certainly for clothing where we don't know who was first. Who knows? Maybe the guy were the first to wear them. Maybe we were the first to wear them. Then, if we don't know they were first, maybe we could be matir. So it'd be interesting to think about whether that helps us for a tie. Next, the Taz, Sifkat, and Gimel accepts the Ravid that we can't have a simon to be makabe. It's a group of people. The Ravid has two pshatim and Rambam. The Darkei Tshuva says that's why the minhag is not to use a bell to gather people to shul. Okay, one last point. What about a goyish haircut that isn't law, that isn't very long hair? So let's review. We know the Rambam says the following, and the question is, what does he mean? The Rambam, and again, Perek Yud Aleph of Hilchos Avodah Zara, talking about clothing, a haircut, says like this. The loy gadel tzitzis kemo tzitzis rosham, loy galeach menat stadim yaniach haser be'emtza kemo shem osin, the law, the zewa nikra bloibis, the loy galeach haser me keneged panav, me ozen lo ozen yaniach haper melacharav kederach shem osin. So there are two ways, as we saw, how to read this Rambam. The way the Beis Yosef understood the Rambam is he's coming to prohibit two different things. The first statement is a general statement, which is the lo yigad al tzitzis kemo tzitzis rosham, colon mark. What are the two types of the prohibited haircuts? Number one is blois, which is giluach menat stadin b'niach ser b'emtza. And number two is lo yigad chaser mekineged panav, leaving the hair long in the back, parel acharav. Right? That's the way the Beis Yosef read it. We saw the Bach disagrees. He says, no, the Rambam's actually coming to prohibit three things. Number one is the Ligad al Tzitzis Kamo Tzitzis Rosham. Number two is Gidol Menat Stadim. And number three is Mi Keneged Panav Me Ozen La Ozen Meniach HaPer Melacharav. And the Bach argued that that's really, these three categories are already Mavur in the Taras Kainim. This is a Bach Zivkat on Dalet. And this understanding is basically accepted by the Shach and the Ta. Well, yeah, I think the Shach and the Ta is both like the Bach, as does the Gra, I think, to double check. Anyway, so what's the first category? So the first category sounds like growing out your hair. So maybe it would say that if you have long hair, it would be Aser, according to the Rambam. Now, even though you don't have any of these funny haircuts, you just have long haircuts. So then this would be Aser. However, it's not so simple, because even if we accept this reading of the Rambam, the Taz writes as follows. This is the Taz. Gimel. Sorry, Taz Aleph. Voi gadol tzitzis rosho, debir Rambam, nira da'af beloshum giluach ne'amar iser zed. In other words, just having long hair without cutting it in a funny way is a violation. Tainu shderach avayin bali mil chamos, v'harbi medinos l'gadol seir ha'shelohem, me'od ve'ena megalchen atzman klal. They get very long hair, they never cut it. So that's not what most people with long hair do. Moreover, so the Taz continues, Uliasa Kane Israel, the Avza Bechlau Megadlid Bloyres, Shasuchachan. Dafal P. Shachar Kachas of Pirshacher, Amagadlid Bloyres, Dainu Shimanichanasir Bam. So then he has another version of this, Mikol Makom, Chad Taimahu, why? Shaklalhu Shish Israel, Uli Havdil Mayhem, Malukach Malukach. You have to look distinct, including in your hair. Kimadinas chalukim chalukos bismanam b'minhaga. Okay, then he quotes the Beis Yosef. He doesn't like the Beis Yosef. Says the Shach. So he quotes the Bach as well. He disagrees with the Beis Yosef. Aval the Bach chalak alav because Muhammad the milch may abipne ban pe nafshehi ligadot tzitzis rosho. When is it also? What's this first category? Long hair for beauty, derech shachatz v'gaiva, like the besulos. And this is also the view of the prisha. So, according to the Maharik, I'll say the Gra, so, could be that it would be more machmir. But if we except the Rama, which the Shach and the Bach basically do. They accept the Rama / Ma'arik. So why should it be different than any other type of stylish clothing? Meaning to say, if you're going to be mat your stylish clothing, because let's say that's considered a tam, you're doing it derech kavod. Ma'arik says if it's for kavod, it's mutter. So why wouldn't you say the same thing for the hair? Now, Ma'arik might still ask for the long hair because it's derech gaiva, if that's in fact the case, as the Shach says. But the truth is that even the Ma'arik only asks things in that context if it's miyuchad lahem. In other words, at least if it's not, if you have a situation where we abstained because of pritzos or some other reason, then it's a violation of chuppos akum. And therefore, it's not clear that Klal Yisrael abstained from long hair because of pritzos. And this does bring us to a certain ambiguity in the Ma'arik, because it's not entirely clear. But he writes the following lashon. He writes, so he's saying, you know, why are certain things usher? Like they're acting as sanish shah. Dvarim halalu divrei shachatz v'gai v'hem. We saw the Shach just quote that lashon. V'lo be'ela chelak Yaakov, ela divrei Yisrael, darkim yos tznurim v'anavim yosho aretz. Jewish people are humble. V'lo l'fan v'sal rehavim. V'avkamzos. And even though you are doing a particular practice, which isn't derech, you know, which isn't anava, it's only when you're doing it in order to be like them. Velola toelis yedua, and you don't have a toelis yedua. But let's say you have a toelis yedua. You want a stylish long haircut because it's good for business. You're trying to look like a cool guy. You think you'll sell more houses that way, or I don't know, whatever it is. So then, it's not usher. Lokamer stam lo yetib argaman. Didn't say stam, you can't go out with the argaman. Rather, it's in order to be like them. Kimo shehem yotzin. Lo shaych lasa mishum holich. Acher chukoseim. Now, heicha shedvar marin sheyisrael mizdam aleha kibom sheoset maisat miya. Asher en litlo stam basiyas el nechuka chuka kid precious liyal. So this is hard to apply exactly, but let's say a person has longer hair, then, and certainly if it's not super, super long, then even if we accept the reading of the Bach, it's not going to be necessarily usher. So this is a little bit of a correction to what I said earlier about what the Bach would say for long hair. One of the ha'ara back to the question of turkey on Thanksgiving. So we pointed out before what Rav Moshe says, which is if you accept the view of the Ran, then it'll probably be okay. Because the Ran says that chuppos akum means you can't do things that are associated with idolatry. And Rav Moshe says we could be quite confident that there's no association between turkey and Thanksgiving and idolatry. And certainly, let's say you hold like the Shiori Bracha, which we mentioned, who says that there is no chuppos akum for practices done by the Ishmaelim because they're not idolaters. According to the Ma'arik, less clear. You could argue it's aser because why are we eating turkey? There's no time for turkey. We're eating turkey to be like them. So that's much less passionate. You could say, but there's a time. But the time is worthless. Well, it's time was 600 years before, 300 years ago, they ate turkey. I don't know. Rav Hutner, we saw, was machmir for Thanksgiving, for eating. He had a reason which was not at all clear. He sort of made it up, but he argued that things that are fixed on the calendar automatically within a chuppos akum. Rav Moshe, as we mentioned, goes back and forth, but more or less is matir, as long as it's not fixed on the calendar. So what does fixed on the calendar make a difference? Now, the Tantra of Moshe says, well, push comes to shove, we accept the reason of the Ran. The Ran says it's only Yasser if there's Sheichos to Avodah Zarah. This doesn't have Sheichos to Avodah Zarah. So Mali, if I do it once every 3 years, once if I do it, well, Mali, if I do it every year. The problem with doing it every year, Rav Moshe writes, is something totally different. That's because then it already becomes a Shiloh of Baal Tosef. If this is every year on Turkey, on Thanksgiving, I have Turkey, you know, as a chok. So then then that could be Asvastatosif.